I'm sorry. We don't know. We don't know. We are Tashem. All right, so we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Kuf Yud Dalid. It's Kuf Yud Dalid. We are going to go ahead and begin on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. 113b. Now I realize I recorded the rest of the daf yesterday. I didn't upload it. So Meretz Hashem, I'll upload it this morning and it'll be there. But we're gonna pick up with Machriz Rava, which is three lines up from the bottom of the daf. So you all in Meretz Hashem, we'll just do a little bit of retroactive homework in Meretz Hashem. We'll pick up from there. So Machriz Rava announced the following. He said, "V'itei Rafuna, the Salkin le'ilin o the Nachlin le'tasa." To those who go ahead, the Salkin le'ilin means those who go up, referring to those Jews who go from above El Teretz Yisrael, u the Nachlin le'tasa, and those Jews who go from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Hai bar Yisrael the yada sadusa l'kusi. So a Jew who knows testimony for a kusi. So we'll say, you know, it's interesting. Kusi, we know, is a specific designation. We spoke about the kusim many times throughout our journeys through Shas. Remember, again, the kusim were an indigenous people from Kusa who were resettled in Eretz Yisrael by Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur. And when the Kusim were in Eretz Yisrael, they were idolaters. There was an outbreak of lions in Eretz Yisrael, which is strange because lions are not indigenous to Eretz Yisrael. And they converted. The problem, of course, was that their conversion was always suspect. Therefore, again, the Kusim are always treated in an interesting way in Halakha. So we'll see, for example, the Gemara brings down, I think we saw this in Ksuvis, the Gemara in Chula brings it down, that generally any mitzvah that the Kusim do, they do better than Jews. So meaning, what they take on again with incredible scrupulousness. The problem is, they don't take on a lot of stuff. So in general, and they were also found to be worshipping Avodah Zarah even after their conversion. So there's a discussion of halacha in terms of what their status is. So the Gemara says over here, if somebody knows, testimony for a kusi. But sometimes kusi is really also used just as another name for a non-Jew. So someone knows testimony for a kusi, below tavu mine, and he was not told by the court that he has to show up and testify. And he goes it anyway, and he testifies on behalf of a kusi against another Jew. Ultimately, again, we excommunicate him. Meaning, so for a Jew to willingly go to court on behalf of a kusi against another Jew is not appropriate, says the Gemara, says Rava. And mishamtinali, we would put a person like that in shamt, would excommunicate him. My taima. Now, what's the reason for that? The inhu mafki mamona top of kuf yodalid afuma dechad. To which the Gemara answers, because top line of kuf yodalid will say, because again, kusim, the way they adjudicate halacha is they will go ahead and they will extract money based on the testimony of one witness. Rashi says, Apuma dechad, benimtza, shef sidu shelo kedin. And therefore it turns out that the Jew, by testifying on behalf of the kusi, has caused another Jew to suffer a loss, shelo kedin. Rabbi says, shelo kedin means not in accordance with the halacha, since we paskin that lamaisa, again, you could only go ahead and extract money based on two witnesses. So testifying on behalf of a kusi and causing another Jew to lose money through one witness is not appropriate. V'lo amran el achad. So we'll say that's only true that a Jew can't give testimony on behalf of a kusi. On behalf of a kusi, when it's in the kusim court, the kusi court, and they're going to extract money based on the testimony of one witness. Aval betray lo. But Rabbi say ultimately, again, if it's going to be based on two witnesses, then it's not a problem. V'chad nami lo arman ella debedine demegista. Furthermore, extracting money on the basis of one witness is only problematic in the Beis Din of Megista. Rabbi Sev Rashi says, "Bnei Kfar she'en yodin ladon b'mishpat." It's only if you're going to go ahead and go to testify in one of the village courts. So one of the village courts where they're not really proficient in halacha, about Beidar, but if you're going to go ahead and testify in one of their major courts, Rashi's Shilton, then inhu nami chad amemusa shadule. Then I'll both say in the regular kusi courts, so they also only extract money based on the testimony of two witnesses, and the most that you can go ahead and accomplished through one witness is a shvua, is an oath, just like our Beis Din. So the point that Rav is making over here is, you can give testimony on behalf of the Kusi in the Kusi court, as long as the Kusi court uses the same standards of judgment as a Beis Din would. But if the Kusi court does not go ahead and use the same standards of judgment, then the Jew should not participate. Amar Rav Ashi, ki avina be Rav Huna ibaylon. So Rav Ashi said, when I was in the house of Rav Huna, they asked the following question. Adam chashuv de sanchi aleika betray, mafki mamona apume. So listen to this. In the Kusi court, apparently, when it comes to an Adam Chashuv, if an important person is giving testimony, they will treat the testimony of an important person like two witnesses. So, should an important person go ahead and try to avoid going to the Kusi court knowing that they will treat his word like two witnesses and extract money based on his word? Odilma, Kevan da Adam Chashuv, or on the other hand, do we say, listen, because he is an important person, he's not really going to be able to avoid being pulled into the Kusi court, and therefore the mice again, they're going to find him, and therefore because they're going to find him, he should just comply with them from the outset. To which the Gemara says, Teku. It's a good kasha, we're not sure. Amar Rav Ashi, Hai Bar Yisrael Dezabonle Arla Obi Kochavim, Am Mitzra De Bar Yisrael Chavrei, Mishamtinale. People say, this is very interesting. If a Jew goes ahead and sells property to a Gentile that borders, so a Jew, let me clarify this case. A Jew sells a piece of property that borders on another Jew's property. So Reuven sells a piece of property that borders on Shimon's property, and Reuven sells that property to a Gentile, to an Ovid Kochavim. So the Gemara says, Mishamtinale, we excommunicate Reuven, the seller. Now, my time, what's the reason of Mosai? And by the way, this is not talking about Eretz Yisrael, right? Eretz Yisrael selling property to non-Jews is a much bigger problem. Meaning, again, there's potential Isra Doraisa, which, again, without getting political in any way, not talking about land for peace now. I'm talking about, again, just the concept of selling land in Eretz Yisrael to a Goy. That's why, just by the way, one of the major controversies regarding Heter Mechira, so, is the notion of selling land to non-Jews. That's why many who are against Heter Mechira in general say you're not allowed to sell Eretz Yisrael lands to non-Jews. Now, again, there's a counter-argument for it, but the question, the kasha sometimes is stronger than the teretz. It's definitely a teretz. In any event, we're leaving aside Eretz Yisrael right now. This is talking about Stam. A Jew goes ahead at Shimon. Shimon lives in his home. He's a bordering piece of land. Reuven owns land. He sells it to a Gentile. So we will excommunicate the seller. My time. What's the reason? So there's halacha bar metzra. This is actually interesting halacha. The halacha bar metzra says that if I am a next door neighbor to Reuven, and Reuven is selling his property, so the halacha is Reuven is supposed to give me, the neighbor, the right of first refusal. As the neighbor is supposed to get first crack at it. The Rabbi says, he doesn't have to give me a discount, meaning I have to pay market. But Lamais, again, the halacha of Bar Metzra, which again, this is, we'll see this actually in Bava Metzia, Meretz Hashem, is this agricultural land, residential land. So we'll get into all of that later. But if you want to say that the issue over here is that Reuven sold it to the Gentile without first offering it to the Jewish neighbor, we learned that if you bought property from a Gentile, or if you sell property to a Gentile, the halacha of Bar Metzra does not apply. So we'll say again, we'll explore that in greater depth later on, but for now we'll take it at face value, that the halacha of Bar Metzra literally means a neighboring piece of land, does not apply when buying and selling to Gentiles. So it can't be because of Bar Metzra. Ela da amrilei, Arbois li arye amatsroi. So rather it's because Shimon ultimately, again, is the guy who's living there, says to Reuven, the seller, the person who sells to the Gentile, you put a lion at my border. In other words, we'll say that the Gemara is talking under a particular climate. And under the particular climate that the Gemara is expressing is that there weren't always easy relationships between Jews and Gentiles. So the Jew says, you've gone ahead and you've put a potential source of danger at my doorstep. And for that, ultimately, again, that's inappropriate. Therefore, as a result of that, we will go ahead and we will put Reuven the seller in Shamta. So the Gemara says, so now what does that accomplish? So it accomplishes the following. We put Reuven in Shamta, next communication, until Reuven agrees to take upon himself any onsin, any extenuating circumstances that may arise as a result of the Gentile living next to the Jew. In other words, that we say to Reuven, okay, you want to sell the property to a Gentile, you have to guarantee that if anything ever happens to Shimon, this is the guy who lives there, as a result of the Gentile living next door, that you, the seller, will guarantee to make Shimon whole. So should the Gentile do anything adverse or do anything negative to the Jew who lives there, that you, the Jewish seller, will take responsibility for that. Okay, amazing Gemara. Mishnah. Not lo mochsen es chavara. So Moshe said, so we're still back to the tax collectors. The tax collectors took my donkey, v'nosn lo chomer acher, and they gave me another donkey instead. Moshe said, now, bepashtos over here, what happened? The tax collector feels bad. He feels bad. So he took my donkey. Now, see, he doesn't feel bad enough to give me back my donkey. He'll give me a different donkey. So he takes my big donkey, gives me back a small donkey. Or, v'nosn lo chomer acher, not lo listim es ksuso, v'nosn lo ksus acher. So we'll say, if a robber stole my coat, and he gave me a different coat back. It's cold, he feels bad. It's a robber with a compassion. So he takes my coat, he gives me a different coat instead. So what's that? Lochare elu shelo. So I will say, ultimately, again, these items belong to the individual who received them. Mipnei shabayla mesiashu. And I will say, remember, now the issue at play over here is, I've had something taken from me, and I've been given another item. But I also understand that chances are that item is what? That item is stolen. Right, because remember again, we're also dealing, as we set up in the previous sugya, with tax collectors, either again, who are just taxing more than what they're permitted, or self-appointed tax collectors. But either way, it's effectively theft. And obviously the case of the thief is obviously theft as well. So I am receiving stolen property to kind of compensate me for the property that was taken from me. So the Mishnah Paskins, I am permitted to keep this property that I receive. Why? Because the assumption is that the Bailim, the original owners of this property, had Yeush. They despaired of ever retrieving this item. Therefore, they relinquished ownership. Therefore, again, I am permitted to keep these items. Says the Gemara, Hamatzel min anar min agayis min alistim. Similarly, if I retrieve property, right? Property that was lost in the river, or property that was taken by Gaius. Gaius, I will say, is like a marauding troop. Or min alistim, or from robbers. Im this yashim ha-bailim hara elu shalom. We'll say, if the owners despaired, if the owners gave up hope of ever retrieving the object, then ultimately, again, I am permitted to keep it. We'll say, if somebody lost a swarm of bees, if the owners gave up hope from retrieving it, then ultimately, again, these belong to the finder. I'm Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Ne'emanas isha okatan lomar mikan yotzel nechil zer. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka said, a woman or a katan are believed to say that we saw the swarm come from this direction. Umahalech besoch sunday shel chaver. We'll say again, we'll define all these cases. Similarly, again, we'll say, if I lost my swarm of bees, second wide line, kuf yudalad amadalad, I lost my swarm of bees, and they entered into the field of my friend. So what's the halacha? I am permitted to walk into the field of my friend, lahatzil es nechilo. So I am permitted to effectively trespass into someone else's property in order to save my swarm. Bim hizik, and if I damaged property while trying to retrieve my swarm, mishalim mashahizik. I am permitted, so I pay for what I damaged. Aval lo yakutz es socho, amanas litin es adam. But I will say, what can't I do? I can't cut down a branch from my friend's tree with the intention to pay him back. Now, that case would be, let's say my swarm of bees settled on a branch. So I don't want to start taking the bees one by one. What I want to do is I just want to cut off the branch, take the branch with me. So I can't say I'll cut off the branch with the intention, of course, to compensate the owner for the damages. Rabbi Shmuel ben Noach, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, Omer, Av Kotei Tzvinos Lezdam. Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, says, you could even cut off the branch with the intention to pay back the damages. It says the Gemara Tana, in Natal Machzir, Lebailim HaRishonim, Kasavar Yeush Kedei Lokan. Now we have another Braisa. So the Braisa, remember, the first statement of the Mishnah said that if something is stolen from me, or for that matter, again, if the tax collector takes something from me, and what happens? and gives me another object instead. So what are the Mishnah paskin? The Mishnah said, I can keep it. Now, what's the logic in the Mishnah statement? The logic is because we assume that Yeyush is Kani, that once the owner is despair of retrieving the object, plus again, there's also a Shinoi Rishus, there's also a change in domain, right? So the halacha is I'm permitted to keep it. Yet we have another brisa that says, in Natal, if you received another object from the tax collector, or from the robber, the halacha is machzir lebailim harishonim. You should return the object. You should return the object ultimately again to the original owner. Now, both say this brisa contradicts our Mishnah. So, according to the brisa, what do we hold? Yeyush kedei lo kani. That yeyush by itself does not affect acquisition. Look at Rashi. Yeyush kedei shenes yaishu habailim biyad muchos lo kana hamuchos biyush levado belonis sinas damim oshinoi maisa. So we'll say, apparently the Braisa holds that Yeyush by itself does not affect ownership. See, even though when the tax collector took it, or when the robber took it, the owners despaired of retrieving it. So despairing of the owners by itself without either a transfer of funds or some type of change in the object does not affect acquisition. Therefore, again, when I receive the object from the tax collector, or from the robber, I have to go ahead and seek out the original owner. Others say that the way to read the braisa is, if I want to return the object to the original owner, then I should do so. In other words, but if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, it's a nidas chasidus. If I want to be a chasid and return the object to the original owner, that's fine, that's nice. Am I obligated to do that? No, no obligation, but if I want to, I can. My time, Yeyush kedei kani. So I'll say, ultimately, again, because Yeyush by itself does affect acquisition, mihu, amar efshi b'mamon she'eno shali, but if I say I don't want to keep stuff that's not mine, machzir lebailim harishon. And I'll say, I have the right to go ahead and return it to the original owner. So we'll say fundamental machlokes between our braisa and our mishnah, but our mishnah is indeed the halacha. That technically speaking, if I go ahead and I have an object stolen, but the thief gives me back something else instead, on a technical level, I am permitted to go ahead and keep that object the thief gives me, because yeyush kedei kani, we hold that yeyush is kone. However, again, there is a midas chasidus. There is an additional level of piety to say, look, I don't want to benefit from someone else's loss. I don't want to benefit from someone else's stolen property. And so I don't want to keep this. Again, I might be halachically entitled to keep it, but I don't have a desire to keep it. The Gemara goes weiter. Hare elu shalom nesha bailim. So remember again, so the Mishnah said, when I receive that object from the thief, from the tax collector, I can go ahead and keep it. Why? Because the assumption is that the owners had yeyush and despaired of retrieving. Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi said, lo shano ela listim obed kochavim. So this is only true. This is only true. We're talking about Gentile robbers. Avalistim Yisrael lo. But Rabbi said the halacha does not apply ultimately with Jewish thieves. Why not? So the Gemara says, Savar lemachar nekitna lebedina. Because Rabbi said when it comes to a Jewish thief, so when I know that my object was stolen by Jews, I know that I have recourse. What's my recourse? My recourse is based in. I'm never truly miyayish. If a Jew steals my property, I'm not miyayish. Why? Because I say to myself, tomorrow I'll take him to based in. To which the Gemara says, but with a Gentile thief, that's when there's yeyush, because they don't really have any recourse. Maskev Rav Yosef, adarabba, ipcha mistabra. I would say just the opposite. Akum didaine bigiti lo miyayish, Yisrael kevan de me'amri me'mar miyayish. So listen to this, Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, I say just the opposite. You see, with a Gentile, I actually have greater recourse. Why? Because I could take him technically to secular court. Secular court has the power of enforcement. With a fellow Jew, Rav Yosef says, I'm limited to what? Taking him to Beis Din. And remember, again, Beis Din doesn't always have the power of enforcement. Beis Din has the power of psak halacha. Beis Din has the power, ultimately, again, of shamta, of excommunication. But Beis Din doesn't always have the enforcement arm that secular court has, which is quite interesting. Therefore, again, says Therefore, again, says Rav Yosef, I think that halacha might in fact be just the opposite. Ela I itmar asefa itmar. Rather, if you're going to make that statement, make it on the seifa. Hamatzel mina akum o mina listim. Rav Yosef, ultimately, look at the. So let's assume this goes on the end of the Mishnah. That if one goes ahead and retrieves an object from a Gentile or from robbers, im nisyaishu habaylim in. So Rav Yosef, if ultimately again the owners had Yeyush, then I, the retriever, am permitted to go ahead and keep it, however, stoma lo. But if I don't know if the owners had Yeyush, then I'm not permitted to keep it. Lo shano ela akum. That's only trouble, say, by danjus, mishum didaini bigiti. Because ultimately, again, because there's the ability to go ahead and retrieve the object through the courts. Avalisti misra kevan da'amra memri miyayish. But ultimately, again, but by a Jewish thief, because of us, the only recourse I have with him is Beis Din, even though Beis Din could give me the license to go to Jewish court, but I have to begin with Beis Din, and since the enforcement arm of Beis Din is going to be limited, so ultimately, again, the victim is miyayish. Tanan hasam. So we learned over there. So tanan hasam. Oros shal ba'al habayis. Machshava mitamasa. So we actually had this earlier. The halacha is that in general, a utensil is makabel tuma when it's complete, when it's a finished product. So when does an item become a finished product? When the owner decides that it's finished. So the moment that I decide cognitively that the object is finished, at that moment it's mekabel tuma. So it says the Gemara Tanan Hasam, Oros shabal habayis mashal mitamasan. So the skins, the hides of a balabos. So when he decides that they are complete, they're mekabel tuma. B'shal avdan, we'll say the tanner, in machshava mitamasan. Thought, in other words, even if the tanner says, it's a finished product, it's not makabel tuma. Why not? Because it was, I remember, again, the halacha is that the tanner plans on selling it to someone else. Because he plans on selling it to someone else, therefore what? There's still more to be done with it. Because there's still more to be done with it, therefore the mice, again, it's not a finished product, therefore it's not makabel tuma. I'm sorry, fine. Shagazlon ein machshava mitamasan. The shalganov machshava mitamasan. Supposed to listen to this. A gazlan, most remember, a gazlan is someone who ultimately steals openly. So for a gazlan, his machshava does not render the item, his machshava does render the item a finished product, and therefore it is makabel tuma. However, again, I'm sorry, I just said that wrong. A gazlon, his machshava does not render the object a finished product, and therefore it's not makabel tuma. But a ganov, who steals secretly, so his machshava will render it a finished product. Now, why this distinction? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, gazlon ein machshavto mitam asan, delav didehu, dechevan diyoda man shakle, mine lo miyayish. So let's listen to this. The assumption over here is that because a gazlon steals publicly, and therefore the victim knows who the thief is, the victim does not despair of retrieving the object. So because since he knows the identity of the thief, he'll bring him to Beis Din and he'll retrieve the object. Therefore, again, the gazlon is not the owner. Because the gazlon is not the owner, his thought process does not impact the status of the utensil. On the other hand, or of the hide in this case, on the other hand, when it comes to a ganov, the owner doesn't know who stole the object. Because of that, he has yeyush. Because he has yeyush, ultimately the ganov acquires the object. And therefore, if the ganov decides ultimately again that the hide is finished, it in fact is makabel tuma. So says the Gemara. Reb Shimon, we'll say that's the opinion of the Rabbanon. So according to the Rabbanon, essentially, again, a ganav goes ahead and acquires the item because you assume there's yeyush of the owners, but a gazlon does not. Reb Shimon says chiluf hadvarim. Reb Shimon says just the opposite. Shel gazlon machshava mitamasan. So we'll say Reb Shimon argues on the Rabbanon, and according to Reb Shimon, a gazlon in fact acquires the object. So because he acquires the object, his mindset goes ahead and establishes the item as a ready to be makabel tuma item. Shel ganav in machshava mitamasan. Rabba say ultimately again with a ganav, if machshava is not metame, lefi shelo nisyaishu habaylim. Because ultimately, again, by a ganov, the owners have not despaired of retrieving the object. Now, Bosai, now what's Reb Shimon's logic? So Reb Shimon's logic is like this. If you're going to be a gazlan, then what? Chances are you are above the law. Why? Because Rabbi said, if you're going to steal in plain sight, and you don't care if the owners know that you stole from them, that means that you're so powerful that you don't worry about the reach of the law. Ma she'en kein, a ganov, is someone who has to steal secretly and quietly, which means he's still within the purview of the law. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, Rabbi says, there's a fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanon. The shayla at what point in time does the victim have yeyosh? According to the Rabbanon, if lemaisa by a gazlon, the victim does not have yeyosh, because he assumes that because the identity of the perpetrator is known, he will be able to prosecute the case and potentially retrieve the item. Therefore, he's not miyayish. Ganov, I don't know who stole from me. Therefore, I have yeyosh. Rabbi Shimon is just the opposite. By a gazlon is above the law. If he's stealing publicly, he's above the law. Therefore, the owners have yeyosh. By a ganov, there's the possibility that through an investigation, they'll discover ultimately who the perpetrator was. Therefore, there's no yeyosh. So says the Gemara, Amar Ula, Machlokes Bistam. So the Bosei, the Machlokes is only in a case of Stam. Now, Bosei, Stam means, look at Rashi, Delo Sham Inan Demiyayish. The Bahal Pligi, the Marsavar Stam Geneva Yeyosh, Bailamu, Velo Stam Gezelo, Marsavar Chilip Advarim. The Machlokes is only in a case where we did not hear the victim articulate that he was Miyayish or not. Stam means we didn't hear his articulation. Aval biyadua, but I will say ultimately again, if we know that at the end of the day he was miyayish, then divrei hakol yeyosh kani. Everyone will agree that in fact that yeyosh is kona. Rabba Amar Rabba says no, biyadua nami machlokes, even where we know that the owner was miyayish, there's still a machlokes. Amar le Abaye le Rabba, so Abaye says to Rabba, lo tif lo galei tu ula, so don't argue. Don't argue on Ula's case. This name must be in Kavosei. Lefish lonis yaishu habaylim. Because the Bosei says quite explicitly that what in the Mishnah, that why ultimately again can the individual keep the object? Because the owners did not yet have yeyosh. Taimur lonis yaishu habaylim. The reason why the person could keep the object is because the owners did not have yeyosh. Aval nis yaishu habaylim hari elu shalo. But the Bosei, if there was yeyosh, then ultimately he would be able to keep it. Amrale, so he says to him, Anan, lefi she'en yeyosh bailim masnin alei. In our version of the Mishnah read, because there was no yeyosh bailim. So it's now, okay. So we have, supposed to say, fundamental machlokes. Again, just keep in mind, the fundamental dispute over here is, at what point in time is there yeyosh? What point in time is the victim miyayish? Is the victim miyayish in the case of a gazlon, not in the case of a ganav like Rabba, excuse me, like Reb Shimon, or is the victim Yaish in the case only of a ganav, not in the case of the gazlon, like the Rabbanon? Fine. So says the Gemara. So not lo muchsin chamoro. So Moshe, remember again, the Mishnah said that if the tax collector took my donkey and gave me another donkey instead, I'm permitted to keep the donkey I received. So money. Moshe, whose opinion does this reflect? I Rabbanon kashi gazlon. So if it's the Rabbanon, then the kasha would be on the case of a gazlon, because according to the Rabbanon, there's no yeyosh in the case of a gazlon. I Reb Shimon kasha ganav. And if it's Reb Shimon, the kasha would be in the case of a ganav, because according to Reb Shimon, it's in the ganav case ultimately again where he's not miyayish. To which the Gemara says, "Bishlam of the Ula, Damer Biyadua, Kani, Hachanami Biyadua." The Devar Akol. So, according to Ula, who will set up the Mishnah as a case of Yadua, where we know the owner had Yeyosh, so then it makes sense. That's why the Mishnah paskins that I could keep the object, because no matter where the owner was Miyayish. Ella l'Rabba Damer Biyadua, Nayimachlokes Hamani. But according to Ula, who says that Rabbi says, even in a case where I know that the owner had Yeyosh, there is still a machlokes. So, whose opinion does the Mishnah reflect? Lo Rabbanon v'lo Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon won't reflect the view of the Rabbanon, nor will it reflect the view of Rabbi Shimon. To which the Gemara answers, I'll tell you, Belistin Mizuyin Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, the Mishnah would be a case of Listin Mizuyin. Rabbi Shimon, armed robbers. Everyone agrees, or I should say at least everyone, almost everyone agrees, that in the case of Listin Mizuyin, that what? That there's Yeyosh. Rabbi Shimon, in a case of armed robbers, we've actually had this before. In a case of armed robbers, we pretty much always know that the owner despairs of retrieving the item. We can set up the Mishnah's case with list the Mizuyin. Everyone will agree that because there's Yeyosh, I, the person who receives the object from either the tax collector or the thief, is permitted to keep the item. Ihaki, if that's the case, Hainu Gazlan. Rabbi Yosef, isn't list the Mizuyin in the same case of Gazlan? Einachi Nami, to which the Gemara says, you're right, Shrei Gavne Gazlan. The Mishnah is just talking about two different cases of Gazlan. Fine. Tashma, Haganav Vahagazlan Va'anas Hegdeshan Hekdesh Shumas and Shuman. Umasros and Meiser. So what's it? The Braisa says the following. The Braisa says that when it comes to a ganav, a gazlan, Anas, Rabbi say, Anas is someone who forcibly takes something. So their hekdish, if they're makdish the item they took, it is an effective hekdish. Truma san truma, if they make the item truma, it's an effective designation. And maestro san maestro, if they make it maestro, it's effective as well. So money, Rabbi say, whose opinion does this reflect? E Rabbanon, if you say it's Rabbanon, kashya gazlon. Then Rabbi say, we have a problem with the case of gazlon, because the case of gazlon ultimately, again, should be a situation where the owners are not miyayish. Irib Shimin Kashi Ganov, and it's Rib Shimin the Kashi Zanganov. I will say again, all we're doing is it's the same machlokis. Remember, fundamental machlokis, Rabbanon and Rabbi Shimon. The fundamental machlokis is under what circumstances is a victim miyayish. According to the Rabbanon, if my object was stolen by a gazlon, I am not miyayish. Why? Since I know the identity of the perpetrator, I hope that I can get back the item. If it was stolen by a ganav, I'm miyayish because I don't know who stole it from me. Reb Shimon says just the opposite. Reb Shimon says if it's a gazlon, it must mean because he's above the law. Therefore, I'm miyayish. I'm not going to get it back. If it's a ganav, I can find out who the perpetrator is, and therefore I can get it back. So the Gemara is just trying to figure out all these different brisos, whose opinion they reflect. So it says the Gemara, Reb Shimon kashi ganav bishlam ula damar biyadua kani. So if you say it's ula, according to Ula, who says that if I know the owner was miyaish, so the individual who has the item could acquire it. How can I be yadua? So I can set up the price as being a case of yadua. But the Yakol El Rabba Darn be yadua nay machlokes hamani. But I will say, according to Rabba, who says that even in a case where it's known that the owner had yeyosh, there's still a machlokes. There's still a machlokes. Whose opinion does this reflect? The Rabban of the Rabbi Shimon, a Kebi Rabban, or Kebi Rabbi Shimon, to which the Gemara says, "You're right, Hakanami. What's the case? Belistim mezuyim Rabbi Shimoni." But say again, we'll set up the case as armed robbers because everyone agrees that what, in a case of listim mezuyim armed robbers, that there is yeyosh. Ihachi hainu gazlon. Aye, but is that not the same case as gazlon? To which the Gemara says, "You're right. Trey gabne gazlon. These are two different cases of gazlon." Vibaisim. The other possibility is Hamas nisa. Rebbe, but the other possibility is whose opinion is reflected over here? It's Rebbe. Rebbe say, what is Rebbe? Say, the sign your Rebbe Omer, Ganov ki Gazlon. Ooh. Rebbe holds Rebbe say that a Ganov is like a Gazlon. A Ganov is like a Gazlon. The Kaimalon. And Rebbe say, Amud Beis, the Kaimalon, the Gazlon ki Rebbe Shimon. And Rebbe say, what does it mean a Ganov is like a Gazlon? And we hold by a Gazlon like Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe say, remember again, what does Rabbi Shimon hold? Rabbi Shimon holds that when there is a gazlon, the owner has yeyosh. The owner has yeyosh. So Rabbi say it could very well be that we're reflecting the view of Rebbe. Rebbe holds effectively that a ganav is like a gazlon, and a gazlon we pass like Rabbi Shimon, which is another way of saying that both by a ganav and a gazlon, both by a ganav and a gazlon, the victim is miyayish. The victim despairs ultimately again of retrieving the item. Rashi says, "V'kaim alon, v'kaim on, t'haganav kigazlan, d'kamar Rebbe kigazlan, Reb Shimon kamar d'kani." We're supposed to listen to this. So now, here's what's very interesting. So effectively now, we have three different shitos. We have the Rabbanon, Rabbi Shimon, and Rebbe according to Rebbe. And Rebbe. So according to the Rabbanon, so a victim is miyaish in a case of ganov, but not in a case of gazlon. Since in a case of gazlon, the identity of the perpetrator is known. According to Rabbi Shimon, just the opposite. A victim is miyaish by gazlon, and not miyaish by ganov. And now Rebbe comes along and says that ganov is just like the gazlon of Rabbi Shimon, which is another way of saying that a victim is miyaish under all circumstances. Whether it was a gazlon, there is yeyosh on behalf of the victim. So we'll say now a three-way machlokas. Very fascinating. So says the Gemara Gufa. So now we're going to go through this machlokas a little bit. So Gufa says the Gemara Rabbi Omer. Rabbi says, Rabbi Omer, Omer Ani, ganav ke gazlon. Rabbi says, I hold that a ganav is like a gazlon. So Yibayilu, ke gazlon d'rabbana kamar v'lo kani. O Dilma, ki gazlan de Rabbi Shimon kamar v'kani. So we'll say, so here's what's interesting. As much as we just said before that Rebbe said that ganav is ki gazlan like Rabbi Shimon, now the Gemara is asking the question. And Rebbe said that a ganav is like a gazlan. What did he mean? That a ganav is like the gazlan of the Rabbanon. And therefore, what Rebbe say? According to the Rabbanon, there is no yeyosh in the case of a gazlan. And therefore, for example, in the case of the stolen hides, so remember again, the gazlan would not acquire it. Or do we say, oh, Dilma ke gazlan, or Dilma ke gazlan ke Rabbanon. I'm sorry, reverse the order. Is it like the Rabbanon, ultimately again, that a gazlan is not koneh, and therefore again he would not be cornered in the case of the Hides, like we saw before. Or is he saying it's like the Gazlan of Reb Shimon, in which case, again, we say that a Gazlan does acquire. So the Gemara says, Tashma, not Lumuchsin Chamoro. So remember the Mishnah said that if the tax collector took my donkey and gave me another donkey instead, what's the halacha? I get to keep the new donkey. So money, Abbasid, who's the payment does that reflect? Irabanan Kashya Gazlan. If it's Rabbanan, then we have a question because of the Gazlan case, because according to the Rabbanan, ultimately, there's no Yeyush by a Gazlan. Reb Shimon Kashya Ganav. And if it's Reb Shimon, there's a question on the case of the Ganav. I Amrit Pishlama Rebbe Kigazan Reb Shimon Kamar. So we'll say, if you hold, then when Rebbe says that a Ganav is like a Gazlan, he means like the Gazlan of Reb Shimon. And therefore, just like there's Yeyush by the case of a Ganav, there is also Yeyush by the case of a Gazlan. So Vikani, Hamani Rebbe. Then Rebbe says, the Mishnah effective view of Rebbe, Mishum Haki Kani, Eli I Amrit Kigazan Rabbanan Kamar. Below Kani Hamani, Rabbi say if you hold that Rabbi Shimon, the Rabbi, when he says that a Ganav is like a Gazlan, he meant the Gazlan of the Rabbanon, in which case what? There is no Yeyosh, then what? Whose opinion does the Mishnah reflect? Lo Rabbi, velo Rabbi Shimon, velo Rabbanon. Hacham asking, Rabbi say, so again we keep going to our default answer, what's the case? Belistin Luzin. So we'll say, here's the great news. The great news is that no matter what you hold in this three-way machlokas, and again, I know it sounds complicated. It's only complicated because I'm going quickly. I apologize for that. But it's actually not. It's just a three-way machlokas as under what circumstances is a victim yaish. We have the Rabbanon, we have Rabbi Shimon, and now we have Rebbe. But the interesting part is, if you want to construct a case that is l'divrei hakol, what is the case where everyone will agree that the victim is miyaish? We'll say, what is that case? List them as Zuyin, armed robbers, right? That one says armed robbers, that's a case where the victim totally despairs of ever retrieving the item. And therefore, again, every single time we kind of get into a pickle of trying to interpret the Mishnah according to who, the easiest default answer is list them as Zuyin, and the Mishnah goes according to everyone. Iyaki, if that's the case, Hainu Gazlan. So we'll say, here's the problem. List them as Zuyin is a Gazlan case. It's a Gazlan derivative. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Trey Gavni Gazlan. The Mishnah is just reflecting two different cases of Gazlan. Fine. Tashma Ganava Gazlan, Ma'anas Hegdesh, and Hegdesh, Uchmas and Truma, or Maestros and Meister. So let's remember again, we just quoted this price before, not Madalif. A Ganava Gazlan and an Anas. So let's say these are all thieves, right? Ganav steals secretly, Gazlan steals publicly. Anas is someone who extorts something. The Anas may end up giving money to someone. So if they're Makdish, the item they took, the Hekdish is good. If they make it Truma, it's good. And if they make it Meister, it's good money. Rabbi, so whose opinion is this? I Rabbanon, Kashi Gazlan. So we'll say, if it's the Rabbanon, so that's not true. In a case of Gazlan, Rabbi, the Gazlan should not be able to make something Hekdish. Why? Because according to the Rabbanon, a Gazlan doesn't acquire the object. Why not? Because according to the Rabbanon, a victim is not Miyash in a case of Gazlan. I Reb Shimon, if it's Reb Shimon, Kashi Ganav. We'll say, according to Reb Shimon holds that in the case of a Ganav, the owner is not Miyayish. If the owner is not Miyayish, then the Ganav doesn't acquire it. If the Ganav doesn't acquire it, it can't be Makdishit. So the Torah, the Gemara says, Yam Reb Shlomo Ganav Ki Gazlan, the Reb Shimon Kamar. So I'll say, if you say that when Rebbe said a Ganav is like a Gazlan, he meant the Gazlan of Reb Shimon. That means both in the case of Ganav and Gazlan, there's Yeyosh. So Mishum Hachi Kani. Then I understand why the Ganav and Gazlan could acquire the object. Eli'i Amrit Ganav Ki Gazlan de Rabbanon. So we'll say, but if you say that the Ganav is like the Gazlan of the Rabbanon, in which case the Ganav said there is Yeyosh by neither of them, ha money, so whose opinion does this reflect? To which the Gemara will say, again, Belistim Mizuin Rabbi Shimini. You'll have to set it up to get Belistim Mizuin and affects Rabbi Shimini. Ihochi, Hainu Gazlan. We'll say same thing. If that's the case, is that not the case of Gazlan? Trey Gavni Gazlan. Enoch Nami, the Bryce is just quoting two cases of Gazlan. Amir Ravashi the Rabba, Ravashi the Rabba Tashma, Dimasni Rabbi, the Rabbi Shimon Brei. Then Rabbi taught Rabbi Shimon his son, Lo davar sheyeshba achrayis mamish, ella afilu para v'chorishba chamar o mechamar acharav chayovin lahachser mipnei kavod avin. So we just had this yesterday. So remember again, we learned that if children inherit a stolen item, that's what, even if it's not real property, but it's a cow or it's an object that is visible and discernible, or better stated, identifiable, it's appropriate for children to return the stolen object that their father stole. Why? Mipnei kavod avien. Out of honor for their father. Taima mipnei kavod avien. So I'll say the reason they have to return it, why is that out of respect for their father? Ha lav kavod avien lo. But I will say again, we're not for kavod of their father. In other words, it's not about kavodik for their father's memory that the stolen object be there. So it seems to be the driving factor over here is because of the kavod of their father. but where they're not a covet issue, they wouldn't be chayv to return it. What do you see from here? Shmamina Rebbe Gazlan, Reb Shimon Kamer Shmamina. We'll say, what do you see from here that Rebbe said? You see from here that when Rebbe said that a ganav is like a gazlan, he meant the ganav of Rebbe, the gazlan of Rebbe Shimon. So we'll say, bottom line of what the sugya seems to be saying over here, though we'll have to see if it bears out halacha lemaisa, is that ganav is like a gazlan, which means that Rebbe will say, under all circumstances, whether the perpetrator is a ganav who steals secretly or he's a ganav who steals publicly, that the halacha would be that there is yeyosh bailim, that ultimately the owners despair of retrieving the object. Rebbe will say, now whether or not that's halacha lemaisa, we'll have to see. But we've established that that is the shita of Rebbe. So now we effectively have still our three different shitos. The shita of the Rabbanon, that by a gazlon, no yeyosh, ganav, yes yeyosh, Rabbi Shimon, just the opposite, gazlon, yes yeyosh, ganav, no yeyosh, and shita of Rebbe, that both by a ganav and gazlon, there is yeyosh. So three we machlokas, how we paskin, we will see. Says the Gemara, So we'll remember again with the Mishnah spoke about the swarm of bees. Now the Mishnah said when it came to the swarm of bees, so the Mishnah said somebody lost a swarm of bees and they had yeyosh, so the finder is permitted to keep the swarm of bees. Says the Gemara, I understand. Why do you have to add in this case? Meaning you said the principle. The principle is once the owner of the object is miyayish, whoever finds it is permitted to keep it. Why do you have to bring in a specific case of bees? Listen to this. Hachi kamar, this is what it means to say. Afilu nichil shel devorim. That this applies even in a case of a swarm of bees. Rabbi say this is quite interesting. Why? The kinyan d'rabbananu. Because Rabbi say when it comes to a swarm of bees, so the ownership is only rabbinic ownership. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Kinyan d'rabbananu. De'ein kan gezel elem mipnei darkei shalom. Rabbi say, interestingly enough, bees, when it comes to ownership of bees, so technically speaking, if I steal your bees, on a Doraisa level, that's not called theft. Why? Because it's hard for a person to really own bees. Why is it hard to own bees? Now, again, if my bees are kept in my house, that might be something else. But assuming that the way a person keeps a beehive is that it's out in the open, and technically speaking, the bees could come and go as they please, so it's only really rabbinic ownership over the bees. So I might have thought that in a case, Rashi says over there, in kan gezel mimei dark yeshalom, da hefker ninu. Bees technically fall under the category of hefker. But Tanya, so I might have thought that in a case, Rabbi Osei, where the owner over here really only owns it rabbinically to begin with, sakatai tchamino, hai kevan d'rabbana ba'almuhu, dekoni le, afilu stamanai miyayish. So I would have thought that in a case like this, where the ownership to begin with is a weakened ownership, when the bees are lost, so automatically there's the yesh. Kamash malon in this yeshu abaylim in ilo lo. Therefore, I will say the Mishnah comes to teach you that what? That the only time I could keep the bees is when I know explicitly that the owners were miyayish. But if I don't know that the owners were miyayish, I am not permitted to keep the bees. Remember again, the Mishnah said, Yochanan ben Baruch said that both a woman or a katan are believed. The Mishnah, the Lashon of the here was, they are believed to say, we saw the swarm come from this direction. So as it says the Gemara, Isha v'katan b'nei edus ninu, are a woman and katan capable of giving edus? Are they believed for testimony? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, hacham askina, what's the case? Kegon shahayu b'aylim meratim acharehem. Listen to this, Rabbi Yehuda, where we saw, here's the image, swarm of bees are going in this direction. Right, we see a person running after the bees, and isha v'katan masich lefituman, and a woman or a child go ahead. Rabbi Yehuda, masich lefituman means they offer information of their own volition. Va'omer mikan yatsa nichil zeh. We saw the swarm come from this direction. So what they're saying just of their own volition is, we saw the swarm come from the same direction that this person, that these people are coming from now, which would seem to indicate that what? That the people running after the swarm are in fact the owners of the swarm. So what we're seeing over here is, this is a concept of Masiach Lefi Tumah. Masiach Lefi Tumah means that under certain circumstances, even people who are not normally believed to give testimony, if they provide information of their own volition, right, without being prompted, there's a certain believability or legitimacy given to their words because they're just offering it up on their own. So because in this case, the Isha and the Katan and the Masiach Lefi Tumah, then ultimately, again, we will accept their testimony. So we'll say, all right, we'll stop over here. I will, Ramir Tashem, record the rest of the the rest of the daf, probably until the Mishnah, Mirtz Hashem, a little bit later. So we'll pick up a Mirtz Hashem from the Mishnah tomorrow. Shkoyach. Well, so we're continuing the rest of Kuf Yud Dalet Amud Beis 114b, and we're picking up in the wide lines right before the Mishnah. Well, third wide line of Doraisalo. So the Gemara suggests, remember, we're speaking about Masiach Lafi Tumo, when people voluntarily offer information, and the fact that Halacha considers that information to be solid and reliable since it is unsolicited. But the Gemara suggested that we only accept Masiach Lefitumo information in rabbinic matters. But are we to say that in biblical matters it would not be valid? There was once a story of a man who of his own volition volunteered the following information. And he said, Zichurani keshani tinok umurkubani al kasefo shalava. I remember that when I was young, my father took me on his shoulders. He took me out of school. He took me to the mikvah. He removed my clothing. And he immersed me in the mikvah in order to eat truma that night. Rabbi Hanina's version of the story ended the following. My friends used to separate themselves from me and would call me Yochanan, the one who eats challah. And based on this testimony, Rebbe went ahead and established this young man as a kohen. So from here you see that even for biblical matters, Masiach Lefitumo, you know, volunteering information is legitimate, to which the Gemara answers, B'chuma D'Rabbanan. We're talking about Chuma D'Rabbanan over here, therefore it's not a raya. Bakati D'Araisala, is that true still in biblical matters? We will not rely on unsolicited information. Vaha, Ki Aser Rav Dimi, Amarav Chana, Kartigno, Va'amrile Rav Acha, Kartigno, Mishtoi, Mais, Mishtoi, so, Maisa ba lefnei Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Va'omri la, Maisa ba lefnei Rabbi Betinok echa shai Masiach Levitomo va'omar. So there was an episode with a young boy who came before Rabbi, and of his own volition he volunteered the following information. Va'omer, ani ve'imi nishbinu lebein ha'akum. I and my mother, we both were taken captives. Yatsasi lishav mayim daiti al imi. When I went out to draw water, I kept an eye on my mother. Lilko teitim daiti al imi. When I went to collect wood, I kept an eye on my mother. Ve'siya Rebbe api of lakuna. And based on this testimony of the child, which essentially was that his mother was not violated, so Rebbe allowed the mother to marry into the kuna. To which the Gemara says, Bishvuya hikilu. Can't bring a rye over here either, because in a case of shvuya, in a case of a woman taken captive, Chazal ultimately were makel to rely even on a testimony that otherwise would not be fit in other circumstances. Avalo yikots esoho. But remember again, the Mishnah said that if my swarm of bees flies into someone else's field, I could go ahead and go in to retrieve my bees, but I can't cut off the branch if the bees settled on the branch. Tanya Rabbi Shlomo ben Oshra Yochanan ben Baruch Omer, Tanai Bezinu She Yore Lesoch Sadei Chavero, V'Kol Tzeit Soho Shal Chaver Lahatzilas Nechilo. So Rabbi Shmuel teaches, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch teaches, that one of the Tanai Bezin, one of the stipulations upon which Eretz Yisrael was built, is the idea that if my swarm of bees leaves and settles on a branch in my friend's field, that I have the ability to go into his field and cut down his branch in order to save my swarm. Now, obviously, I have to pay him for that branch afterwards, but I have the license to destroy his property in order to save my own. And furthermore, again, I'd have to pay him the value of his branch, literally from the value of my bees. Now, it doesn't literally mean I have to pay him the value, eventually the value of my bees. What it means is I have to pay him the value of his branch. Furthermore, again, and we'll learn this Mishnah later on, that if, let's say again, I see that my friend's barrel with his honey broke, and I'm transporting a barrel with wine, and in this situation, honey is more expensive than wine, so I go ahead and I dump out my wine in order to go ahead and save his honey. The halacha is that when I return to his honey, he is chayiv to reimburse me for the value of the lost wine. Again, we'll see in the subsequent Mishnah the parameters of that halacha. Utnai beznu shei mefarikes itzav atoyim pishtan shachavero v'notel d'me itzav mitoch pishtan shachavero. Same idea that if, let's say, I am transporting wood and my friend is transporting flax. Let's say his donkey dies and he needs help transporting his flax. I could offload my wood, even to my detriment. I lose the wood in order to save his flax, and I could collect the value of my wood from his flax. In other words, if I sacrifice something of mine in order to save something more expensive of my friend's, I am entitled to reimbursement for my loss from my friend's assets. Shamanaskin Hinchel Yoshua Li Israel Esaretz, because it was on this condition, ultimately again, that Yoshua, it allowed Klal Yisrael to inherit the land. In other words, that this was what these financial conditions or these financial realities were built into the very inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. All right, we'll see. We'll stop over here. Eretz Hashem will pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow. Wishing everyone a wonderful evening. Looking forward to continuing with everyone tomorrow.